Do you agree with his like sexual research where he said more men are watchers and more women prefer to be watched? Is that even?
I mean, I want to take his data at face value because you would like to think he'd have no reason to necessarily skew his data. But then again,
he's viewing it from a male lens.
He is.
In his experience. And also he's beating off. Let's not.
Yeah, he's jerking it.
The whole time.
Every raindrop reflecting on the water as the sun shuts her eyes. Don't know why you'll uncover. Watch the tide rolling with the moonlight. Everything is silent on this Louisiana.
We're here to discuss the topic of voyeurism from a book that we read, and here with us is special guest Paige.
Hi.
So this book actually came from Michelle's nightstand, and it is Gay Talese, The Voyeur's Motel. And the actual book is a compilation of Talese's reportage of a Colorado man by name of Gerald Foos, a father of two, who with the help of his wife, Donna, a nurse, created a motel in the late 1960s, engineered to spy on his guests and to satisfy his voyeuristic tendencies. The book is largely written from Gerald Foos's personal manuscript, which he referred to as The Voyeur's Journal, which Talese described as handwritten entries on yellow legal pad notepaper with near perfect penmanship, whereby Foos cataloged and studied his guests, noting his approximation of their heights, weights, education, background, and above all, their sex life and sexual proclivities, all in what Foos noted as the good for sexual research. The motel with its green exterior and orange doors was called the Manor House, which the married couple bought for $145,000 at expense of their own home and was located near Denver and had exactly 21 rooms with over a dozen of those rooms fashioned with 6x14-inch pseudo-ventilation grills in the ceiling that allowed Foos to spy on his guests from the safety of his attic, or what he referred to as the observation deck.
The masturbatorium.
Foos was able to spy on his guests for decades without getting caught. Crawling and kneeling in his attic, he was able to learn a lot about people and their private lives. But while setting out to learn more about sex tiles, positions, pillow talk, and forms of foreplay, he learned that people and couples are largely unhappy and that their private lives rarely match who they pretend to be in public. Shock.
Right.
Originally, Gay Talese didn't see much in coming out to meet the voyeur, but nonetheless was curious and eventually did meet him at his motel. Talese signed a confidentiality agreement upon their meeting and was given full access and was shown by Foos the observation deck. Together, they observed a nice-looking young couple in oral sex while Talese admitted to feeling wrong about the invasion of privacy, as well as unable to look away. In a high-stakes moment, Talese's tie almost outs them as it fell through the vent. Foos, in his journal, writes, "All men are voyeurs to some degree and will demonstrate this capacity if given the opportunity." Talese has expressed a similar sentiment when commenting on his profession of journalism, which opens the debate on who are the true voyeurs in our society. Talese is quick to learn Foos's voyeurism origin story, which Foos attributes to his boyhood in what he saw as a sexually repressed household, where they could talk about everything but sex. He conceived that growing up on a farm with animals naturally kindles his interest in sex. At 9 years old, he would escape for an hour every night to watch his Aunt Catherine from the bushes, who liked to walk around in her house nude with the shutters open and would sit naked and would tend to her collection of porcelain dolls and rare thimbles. Very specific.
I'd hang out with Aunt Catherine.
I have to take off all my clothes when I dust my rare thimbles as well.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Foos did more self-exploration in his biographical notebook, The Collector, where he notes the moment he told his mother that he was jealous of his aunt's things and wanted to collect dolls, and she told him that he could collect baseball cards. It was there for him that the desire to own and collect got mixed with his sexual desires. In high school, he described himself as a loner and a virgin. His high school girlfriend broke up with him when she discovered his foot fetish. It wasn't until he joined the Navy that he discovered women and lost his virginity, but he found that he still fantasized about his Aunt Catherine. He met his wife, Donna, shortly after leaving the Navy and was quick to tell her his secret. While dating, they would drive around the neighborhood where he could peep in on people. He was miserable at his cubicle job of being a field auditor, but he was proficient in logging their oil tank inventory. It was actually his wife, Donna, who helped him make the vents because they couldn't afford the risk of contracting someone who could out them. She was not a voyeur, as Foos commented, but, quote, a devoted wife who planted the idea that he should take notes in the observation deck, and she also brought him snacks while he watched.
Ants on a log.
I wonder if they're, like, coincided with, like, the foreplay.
Well, it couldn't be anything too, like, noisy or
close. Oh, that's true.
That's a good point. Like quiet food.
Like the sun.
Not having chips and salsa.
No.
There.
So shocked, the married couple would also engage in sex in the deck, and Foos saw his hobby as something to take and kindle their marriage with. He said that being a nurse made her, quote, open-minded. From Fu's experiment, he witnessed people and couples in private from all walks of life. Businessmen sleeping with their assistants, known in the industry as hot sheet, men and women cheating on their spouses, couples on vacation, as well as swingers. The 1970s brought new sexual escapades to his attention. He was very intrigued by lesbian women and notably less by gay men, so he was a bit homophobic. He was also intrigued by the increasing frequency of group sex and orgies. One trio, two men and a woman with a vacuum cleaning company, had an encounter, and he journaled his debate on whether to charge higher occupancy rates. Talese noted that there was no shame for Foos in invading others' privacy, only a fear of outing himself or getting caught. When he couldn't get a good view into the room, he would often blare his car's high beams into the room. When people were not having sex, they were mostly boring and watching far too much TV. He noted the differences in the sex, and he found that women masturbated out of depression and men more for physical release. There's a lot to comment there.
Rude observation.
It gets ruder, though. He also said men prefer to watch and women to be watched, as evidenced by men's investment in porn and women in cosmetics. So that's debatable. He noted one female college student who was masturbating in front of a mirror and who, after called her family in Wisconsin, insisted that she was fine and lied about her plans to go out when she never actually left the room. He said in conclusion, quote, "She is having a difficult time, obviously, adjusting to the new environment in Denver, and depression and loneliness appear to have overwhelmed her, but masturbation seems to fulfill this void, at least temporarily." He finds tragedy, but also unknowingly stumbles upon comedy in his observations. On observing the same bored female college student, he writes, quote, "Observing her, I noticed a more depressed individual than before. Her hair is messed up and she has been releasing gas without shame. I would assume she would never do this if anyone was in the room," end quote.
Yeah,
because she has manners.
Sure. As a voyeur, he seemed to have his own moral code and becomes increasingly judgmental. That's an understatement. He was disgusted by this same girl who also picked her nose and wiped her hands, apparently, on the bed sheets, along with the farting.
I wonder if that girl eventually read the book and was just like, damn, like, call me out.
Opposed to the other, like, farting, nose picking people that might have also been there.
Like, if you've never farted and picked your nose in private, you're lying.
He eventually would also create vents in the guest bathrooms to observe their bathroom habits. There were other instances where he seemed to be thinking he was taking the moral high road, like with guests and their pets. In one instance, a guest dog peed on the carpet and Foos was able to note where through the vents and was able to retain his $15 deposit fee, miraculously without revealing himself in his, just call it a hidey hole in the attic. He noted the strange encounters, like one man who secretly peed in his date's bourbon or one man who donned a fairy costume with horns. But then there were the suicides, robberies, and rape, which he observed were harder to witness. He found incest particularly difficult to witness. He wrote, quote, "The most common form of incest is probably brother-sister, especially in poor families where children of different sexes must share the same bedroom," end quote. At the end of every year, Foos would compile his data into an annual report for the purpose of highlighting sex trends he had observed. From the New Yorker article published in 2016, he wrote, "For the year 1973, of the 296 sexual encounters, 195 were white hetero couples who favored missionary." In 1973, he noted that only 5 interracial couples increased to 25 by 1980. It's a lot of... Seems like bogus data, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. His grandiosity and delusion always seemed to be getting worse by his journal entries. He continually gained frustration, it seemed, by not being able to be credited for his sexual research. He increasingly overstepped in his opinion of the male or husband lovers and the lack of female enjoyment. He was developing a godlike complex and becoming increasingly misanthropic. People are basically dishonest and unclean. They cheat, lie, and are motivated by self-interest. They are part of a fantasy world of exaggerators, game players, tricksters, intriguers, thieves, and people in private who are never what they portray themselves as being in public, he says.
Samesies to you.
So this could only go on for so long because things get dark when Foos witnessed a murder in room number 10. A fight had occurred apparently between a drug dealer and his girlfriend after Foos had flushed their supply down a toilet because he clearly has a problem with drugs in his hotel. And Foos watched as the man strangled the woman but left the observation deck before he knew if she survived or not. In his mind, he was observer and not reporter and did not exist in that exchange. He did give the man's ID and license number to the police, which turned out to be fake. And upon meeting the journalist Talese later, this woman was still a Jane Doe and her murder had never been solved. So they lost touch until about 2012. And the journalist learned that Foos was successful in the 90s and opened even a second motel. And he learned that his wife Donna had passed from lupus and that he had a new wife, Anita, who was a divorcee and a fully on board voyeur. In 2013, Foos decided to void the confidentiality agreement and allow Talese to use his real name in his book. He was 17 78 years old and felt he had passed the limitation on his guest privacy laws. His new obsession was the biggest peeping Tom, which in his opinion was the U.S. government. In 2017, Netflix made a documentary called The Voyeur, starring Foos and Talese. And as Michelle mentioned, this journalist is still alive. He's 91, and I believe so is Mr. Gerald Foos. And so without further word from me, we're now going to open up.
So this reminds me of when I teach research methods to grad students, I have to teach them about ethics, right? So we read some of the early research on sex studies. So like the tea room trade is the big one. And it was this dude who, in the name of science, he joined all of these gay clubs at a time when it wasn't okay to be gay. And he served as the lookout person for the casual hookups. He would like watch the door while people banged at this club or whatever. And he was secretly being this researcher, and he was writing all of this shit down and not asking for consent or anything like that. But then he took it a step further, where he would go outside and see what cars they drove and write down their license plates and follow some of them home and find out whether or not they were in closeted heterosexual relationships.
Wow.
He would like pretend to be a salesperson just to like find out the dynamics of their lifestyle, and then would go and write about it. And of course, that's an absurd thing to do, and we can't do that, and there's all kind of ethical dilemmas around it. But this guy, like, he had that same mentality of like, I'm doing this in the name of research. Like, yes, this is maybe terrible to some people, but if I can be a researcher while I do it, then it makes everything okay. And I feel like that's the exact mentality that this guy had.
What do you make of his like collecting obsession and then getting mixed with his now this kind of fetish?
It reminds me of ASMR a little bit. I don't know if you guys are familiar with, you know, ASMR and the content, but like, I love it. You know, I like to fall asleep to like the gentle tapping videos and whatnot. And people who don't experience, you know, like the pleasure from like watching the gentle touching and stuff, they always try to relate it to something sexual. And even though for me, it never feels like that, I can't deny that I can understand that connection. So with the obsessions with collecting, it kind of reminds me of that, because inherently collecting isn't like a sexual thing, but it doesn't blow my mind that they could get kind of
intercrossed.
It's a control thing, right? It's a control because you're the keeper of these things. And, you know, they talk about sex and fear being close, arousal and fear being closely aligned in the brain. And that, you know, there's some research that says that the reason the people, some people, the lunars, get off to balloons popping is because early in their childhood, there was some connection that was made between fear and arousal.
Yeah,
like they were scared of a balloon.
Yeah.
The thrill of it. So surely there's some of that in there in his peeping Tomness. Right? The excitement and the thrill of being the watcher probably makes you feel really, really powerful. But it's a dangerous slope because, you know, one of the biggest risk factors for becoming a rapist is being a burglar. Because you have all of this time in people's houses, and there is a context where in which you could tiptoe around their home while they're sleeping, and that can make you feel really powerful. So then you'll want to do it again and see how far you can push it. And then, oops, here's a context of this person that you could just take advantage of because you put yourself in that world.
And sex and power are so intertwined. And, you know, most of the time, if it's all consenting parties, it can be fun. You know, I think of like BDSM and people wanting to enter a headspace where they're either in complete control or have abandoned all control and are powerless, essentially. So when it's happening in like a consensual space, I mean, it's fun to experiment with the power dynamics of sex. But yeah, when you start tiptoeing around people's houses or observing them from a hole in the ceiling,
he doesn't want consent.
No.
He doesn't want consent because if you could have a voyeur's motel and there'd be thousands of people who would be into it. There would be a line outside to watch people bang from the attic. You know what I mean? And he didn't want that.
No. It's about the fact that there's no consent, which I think definitively answers the question whether he's doing anything morally reprehensible or not. Because I believe that consent and morality are essentially one and the same. And because he does not
have consent from the people,
is amoral.
Yeah, and he found two partners that were like consenting to his activity.
Which is wild.
And that's a whole other question, you know.
That's wild.
The snacks part.
Two ladies were like, "Yeah, I'll bring you some crustless sandwiches." And
sweet little ladies, I imagine, like church ladies, is what I imagine.
Did you watch the documentary?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was it was really the most boring documentary
it was
ever.
Not
they took they took such exciting material and made it so boring. I think I like cleaned my kitchen sink while I was watching it. I was like, this is not thrilling. The book's great though.
There's this notion of consent in these relationships that worries me a little bit. And we talk about it in some of the classes I teach. Like, I know most people wouldn't fall into this scenario, but how is it that he managed so easily to find two women? And how common is this?
Right.
Is it just the patriarchy that tells women that they should bend to relationships in this way? Or are perhaps more of us more likely to do deviant things than we're aware of?
Yeah. Do you agree with his like sexual research where he said more men are watchers and more women prefer to be watched? Is that even?
I mean, I want to take his data at face value because you would like to think he'd have no reason to necessarily skew his data. But then again,
he's viewing it from a male lens.
He is.
In his experience. And also he's beating off. Let's not.
Yeah, he's jerking it.
The whole time.
What'd you call it? The masturbatorium.
Yes. So, I mean, at what point, what research did we miss while you were beating it?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, how observant were you being when you had a pen in one hand?
Flashlight too.
It's a lot. That would really come in handy, I think, for this gentleman. But, you know, in my experience of having very candid sexual conversations with anyone who's willing to have them, I don't necessarily believe that men are more voyeuristic. I think maybe they are more comfortable admitting that they're voyeuristic because it feels like this masculine trait of, you know, let me step back and observe and I get to watch and perform for me. Mm-hmm. But in my experience of just talking with my friends or, like I said, anyone who's willing to talk about it, I encounter plenty of women that are excited at the idea of being the observer or the voyeur. Yeah. So I think he's a little off.
I would agree.
He seemed to say that most women masturbated out of depression.
Yeah, that's some malarkey.
Yeah, that was a bummer to hear. I think that just ties into his idea that women, if there's not a man involved with a woman, she must be
sad, bummed. Right.
But as a woman who masturbates, it's never a depressing thing for me. I'm never bummed out. Usually pretty stoked, pretty happy to be there.
Yeah, maybe college kid just wanted to stay home and bang out another.
Yeah, and also what did he think that she was going to tell her parents when they said, what you up to? Was she supposed to be completely candid and say, yeah, I'm masturbating in this Denver, or where was it? Where was his?
Outside of Denver.
Yeah, I'm masturbating in this Denver hotel room, specifically with my reflection, and that's what I'm into, Mom. Like, what was she supposed to do?
Yeah, Christmas.
Did he want her to be completely candid with them? Like, because she said, yeah, I'm going out tonight, doesn't mean, oh, she must be in the throes of depression.
It's interesting that he seemed to get so upset over time with this notion that people were lying to him or lying to society.
Yeah, that they owed some type of transparency or something. Meanwhile, he's hiding in the attic, expecting people to be transparent about their...
Yeah, are they supposed to argue in front of you when you check in?
Right.
Or how are they supposed to be for you that's different than how they are in that room?
Why would you... But I think that ties into that whole idea of, like, consent once again. He wants to see how people, quote-unquote, really are. And then it frustrates him when he sees that. But I think he likes that frustration. He enjoys the tension of seeing somebody put on a show for the public and then reveal them true selves, not knowing they're being watched. And that's literally his whole thing. I don't think that's a groundbreaking observation. But it's strange that he seems to get so angry.
And now, a quick ad break.
Hey, Murderitas. I'm Danica.
And I'm Shannon.
We are the mother-daughter hosts of Murder and Mimosas,
a true crime podcast that strives to focus on lesser-known cases.
We personally think these episodes go down a little bit better with a mimosa.
You sip, we share.
So grab yours and get ready. Every Saturday at brunch time is a new episode.
You can listen to us on any podcast platform.
He's mad when the pets pee or he can't charge, you know, you check in with two people and it's a threesome and it's three and he can't charge a higher occupancy rate.
Yeah, it's funny. He's got some rigid rules
about drugs and
about occupancy and about pets.
That's the military.
But not about watching people.
Because he thinks he has a moral high ground.
Yes, because he's the voyeur.
Yeah, he's the observer. You know, it's like in the Truman Show, the guy that's watching it all and, you know, orchestrating it all. And he thinks that he knows what's best for everybody else. But at the end of the day, Truman ultimately chooses to have free will as opposed to living in a utopia. It's like a Garden of Eden allegory, I think. People will always prefer free will than utopia.
It makes you wonder what he would have become had he not had these resources. Like, had he not been able to fuel this feeling of power and control by being the voyeur and also sexual desire.
If they had Craigslist at the time, he for sure would have been on the back pages of Craigslist, like, looking for a woman that I can watch through window who pretends I'm not there.
100% yes. Or could he have done something more, far more deviant? Because he doesn't seem to have a good grasp on empathy.
No, he does not.
He doesn't connect with their stories. He doesn't feel sorry for them. You know, he witnesses this murder. It takes a few minutes to strangle someone at least, mm-hmm. right? So how long did you watch?
Right.
Could you have just gone and knocked on the door and say, here's some towels?
Right.
And maybe she wouldn't be dead?
Oh, there's a woman on the floor. What's up with that?
Could have just interrupted the murder.
Could've.
And then maybe it wouldn't have happened. How long did he watch up there before he decided to look away?
Mm-hmm.
But that's his only fear, though, is getting caught.
Getting caught above everything.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that he also felt like eventually he had to put it all out there, like for someone who didn't want to be caught, he sure felt comfortable after a certain amount of time having a documentary, having his name in a book. That part blows my mind. I mean, you couldn't waterboard this information out of me.
Right.
He's like, yeah, I guess, bring the camera crew over to my house. Here are my baseball cards.
I'm old, come on down.
Well, I'm old, come on down.
That's the weird part. So, like with voyeurs, like that's the end of the fantasy, right? Is that they have this need, they want to out themselves, it seems. Like, yeah. What do you make of that? That's like the final cherry on top is to like...
I think it's pride. I think he's very proud that he was able to pull off this scheme. I don't think he's looking for any absolution. Just, but he's just pride, like bragging.
Yeah, I think he thinks of himself as like Kinsey, a sexual researcher, although Kinsey was standardized and didn't beat off while he interviewed people.
That we know of,
yes, yes.
Yeah.
I wonder this notion of victimhood, like you're a victim in an extent of a sex crime, but you could never know.
Mm-hmm.
You could live your whole life and never know.
How many of us are victims of sex crimes?
And would you want to know?
I don't know.
Like, I wouldn't want to know if somebody ever watched me pee or something like that.
Airbnbs have been known to spy on people.
That's true. That's why I always make sure I look hot when I'm hanging out on Airbnbs. If I'm getting spied on, I want to be looking my best. So that's my rule with Airbnb.
Always look cute.
Keep it hot.
Shout out
Bushwick Airbnb.
How many people are doing that nowadays, though, I wonder?
How many people do you think may have been inspired by this guy? Like, how many people read this and thought,
pretty recent, 2016, so.
Yeah, how many Airbnb owners are getting little cameras off Amazon now?
Nice leather-bound journals.
But are they beating off, or is it just like a couple that doesn't have anything to watch and they want to live vicariously through the people?
I think eventually you beat off.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Like it might start with this purist ideas, but as soon as you start seeing people naked and doing it.
Yeah.
Like, how can you not?
You're going to be like, why not? Yeah. I'm already this far in.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. The three of us experienced a little bit of that. We stayed in New York and at an Airbnb, and they had a couple that was a little bit intrusive and very, by the end, it was very clearly spying on us. We're leaving out a lot of details.
Didn't they give you a tambourine to play with at some point?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a very strange, specific fetish that I believe they had.
They wanted to start a band.
That's their cover.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, the strobe lights that came down in the middle of the apartment was the giveaway.
But you could follow people for life. Like, if this was really your thing, you could let people come and stay, and then you could find their social medias, and then you could follow them for life.
Yeah, isn't that called stalking?
Sort of. If they don't know about it, I don't know.
Yeah, where's the line between non-consensual observation and stalking? And also
in the digital realm,
putting our stuff out there so much, but then being horrified when people are paying tons of attention. Like, if someone likes every single one of my Instagram stories, I'm like really eked out. But then I'm also putting them out there to be viewed
and liked.
Yeah.
So, you know, are we begging to be voyeured at the end of the day?
That's like when they have cameras at the zoo where you can like watch the otters play 24/7, the pandas.
I did that the other day. I was having a makeout session and we weren't sure what to put on. And I said, let's do the live feed of the pandas.
So are you a voyeur then? It like spired the pandas?
Well, pandas kind of gross me out. So we had to turn it off. I think pandas are gross.
Why?
They're really like clumsy.
They're very clumsy.
They fall a lot.
And it stresses me out. And then, you know, the white parts of their fur get all like mucky. We had to turn it off because it was killing the makeout vibes. But I mean, it was a little fun to watch, you know, for a few minutes. It's like, wow, the pandas don't even know they're putting on a show right now.
But that's exactly how he felt.
Yeah.
I wonder why he had to move into the bathrooms.
Yeah.
Like, did he just need more?
I think our bathrooms are the most vulnerable place I think a person can really be. And
he didn't like farting, so what's he going to make of the bathroom?
He says he didn't like farting, but he also was obsessed with farting at the same time, recording it, talking about it, pondering it. Like, I've never pondered a fart as hard as Gerald Foos has.
Or been offended that anyone did that in private.
I know, that's so wild. Like, why would you be so hurt that people fart when they're alone?
I think he was hurt that I'm assuming beautiful young college woman didn't adhere to his stereotypes of women, which is honestly probably what pissed him off about all of it, that they were like just full humans.
He wanted them to be unaware that they're being unobserved, but also playing into his fantasies.
Do it sexy.
Yeah, do it sexy. Do it sexy.
Which they have places where he could go and observe people that know they're being watched.
But that's not the appeal.
Those are for perverts.
Appeal.
Yeah.
That's not the appeal.
Us versus them. He thought he was special.
The privacy laws is crazy, right? Like, it just ends and you're like, okay, you know, he could come out on the record with all of this.
Yeah, who is responsible for making those laws? Like, what group of people get together and decide after this amount of time? It's chill. It's fine.
It's probably state laws, right?
It's been 30 years.
The hotel or, I don't know, business?
I just still think it's so crazy that he was so down to put it all out there. Like, the big fear of being exposed eventually turned into a huge thrill of being exposed, which once again ties into that idea of fear and thrill and arousal all being so intertwined.
And that was all he had left at that age, you know?
He wasn't, had his baseball cards, too.
And rat tails.
He wasn't going to start another motel. He's too old to climb the stairs into the masturbatorium. So here's his last chance.
His heart said yes, but his knees said
yes. Said no.
Because he could have just died and left all of that shit to somebody.
He could have, but he needed people to know. I can relate a little bit. I mean, I'm a little approval seeking, so I tend to want to tell everyone everything all the time. And sometimes I feel like it just seems like I'm just so comfortable with talking about anything. But really, I feel like if I tell people these really like scandalous things and they just sort of accept it and are interested, then I feel okay about it. So maybe he was, in a sense, after some sort of absolution.
Maybe
I thought that when I was reading it, but when I watched the documentary, I was not getting any sense that this guy needed approval or forgiveness or needed to even admit it. I just really think he was like, look at this neat thing I pulled off.
Yeah. I don't think he's sorry at all, even about the woman who's dead and unidentified.
Which they say is still a little kind of allegedly. Like, I'm still on the fence. Like, if it was gun to my head, do you actually think he observed this murder? I don't know if I could say for sure. All of his data just has to be taken with so many grains of salt. And maybe even during the time, even if he was convincing himself no one would ever know, I know when I write in my journals, I can't help but think, like, if I die and someone's reading this, like, I need to keep that in mind.
You're right.
When I'm making it. So maybe he thought he had to like spice it up a little bit just in the event that there was a book and then a shitty documentary made.
I love that you journal.
I do. It's a new thing. I try.
So if you were the journalist and you got invited to this property, would
Absolutely.
You go, you would go up
in
to the
deck?
Yeah. Cause it's he's got like a little bit of criticism too.
Yeah. I know it's morally reprehensible.
Mm-hmm. He's like, I got this deck. You're like,
but
I'm there in five.
I can't. Yeah. Four. I'm there right now. I'm in the deck.
Meeting
in the deck.
I got hot pockets.
I'm
Take
there.
A break.
I wish I could say I wasn't, and I'm not down to participate in every morally reprehensible, exciting thing that comes my way, or I'd be a psychopath. But, oh yeah, absolutely. If either of y'all were like, come to my observation deck and let's watch some people. I mean, part of the reason I love Christmas time is because everyone keeps their windows open to show off their Christmas trees, and I love walking around my neighborhood and just peeking in.
I think we all love that. I mean, that's why reality TV and true crime is
Absolutely.
So successful, is because we all like to imagine ourselves in that scenario, or knowing what we would do better, or all of those kinds of things that come with reality. Maybe we're just curious about other humans. Maybe we want to know if what we do is normative, right?
Or just the thrill of watching people be people. Is just so exciting. But you're right, that is the whole essence of reality TV. Now, you know, there's so much like fake drama that they make, but I mean, when reality TV was a new thing, like Big Brother and Real World.
Survivor. Let's watch people jump.
Yeah, they just pointed a camera at people and people were into it. They were down for that. So yeah, I'd be up in that deck and then I'd probably be going and telling all of my friends like about this really terrible person who's doing these terrible things, and they'd say, didn't you go up on that deck? And I'd be like, yeah.
He's in charge.
He started it. I just climbed the stairs and drill the holes or anything.
It's weird because, like, we have such, like, a kind of puritanical culture when it comes to, like, sex. But I was reading this book called, it's the true crime, Monster in Florence. And they were saying in Florence because, you know, they're Italian. And most young couples can't, they stay at home. They live with their parents. So to have sex, a lot of couples, lovers go and park in cars. And so they have a huge voyeurism culture because people know that young people do this and they go and they perch and there's like a gateway person that can help. And it's this whole.
It's similar in Mexico. When I spent a semester there, you know, I had a boyfriend and everyone lives with their families for so long. So sex motels are a huge thing, you know, like a pay by the hour type thing. And we ended up utilizing them a few times just because, yeah, you don't really want to get busy in a room that shares a wall with your abuela. And that's not the vibe.
Well, it makes me wonder what changes we'll see, because in America now, most 20-year-olds live with their parents.
Yeah, because of finances and the pandemic and...
Yeah, it's changing. So yeah. What's going to happen?
Yeah, have more of a rise of like sex motels. I kind of loved it, honestly. They had a menu of you know all different like you know condoms and lubes. It was just very. It was kind of convenient to like go to a location specifically.
Did you look for vents?
I did not. Oh, no. No. Well. Oops.
We're not a victim. We're not a victim unless we know.
I pop up in some journal out of Guadalajara, Mexico. That's the girl with the hot pink dreadlocks.
That's the thing I didn't think of, is people are probably recording some of this digitally. Damn.
Yeah.
What about people that, like, when you had roommates, if you can remember that far back, and then, like, people, you hear them having sex, and some people, like, that stimulates them?
Totally. I mean, I've been on all the ends of that. I've been the person who's listening, and they're kind of knowing I'm listening, and I know they know I'm listening.
And I know you know.
Yeah, and it's, like, fine. I've been in the room when other people have said, I'm like, should I leave? And they're like...
You knock once.
If you want to. And I'm like, well, not really. I guess I'll just hang out here, you know? Yeah. It wasn't really for me, but, like, you got to try things. And I've, you know, been with partners where there's a friend in the living room and it's kind of like, hey, we're going to go do this, but, you know, you can hang out if you want. I mean, it can be fun and feeling, but all of those scenarios were consensual.
Exactly.
They were all consensual. I don't think I would enjoy the thrill of non-consensual observation because that's not for me because I'm not a psychopath. Yeah,
you have to have a certain amount or a certain lack of empathy to be able to watch people in their most vulnerable. And it's not even just the sex stuff, but like you watched them when they cried and everything in between. Yeah. Like that's really fucked up when you think about it.
And the incest, we forgot about that.
Yeah.
That was a rape.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's talking about that incest like it's consensual and like all these.
Yeah.
Kids want to bang each other. Like, that's an assumption to make there. Mm-hmm. That is probably not true. And also, they're children. Mm-hmm. You didn't think that this was a problem just because they're children alone?
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't... I mean, this is, like, a huge leap. I'm obviously... I can't psychoanalyze Gerald Foos that much. But I'm not entirely convinced that he wasn't turned on by the horrifying things he saw. I'm not saying he was jacking into the incest or the murder, but if it was revealed that he was, I would not be surprised in the least. I think that the more thrilling and scandalous and horrifying the activities were, the more excited he probably got. And I'm actually kind of surprised that he didn't just straight up admit that he's admitting to all these like horrible things, but then he's pretending that like, oof, I'm drawing the line here. I couldn't participate in that. No.
Well, there's the big governments, the real people.
The big governments.
Yes, that's right. The true watchers. Don't tell him about driver's licenses.
Yeah, don't let him know.
Oh, and we forgot that case in New Jersey where, did you see the Ryan Murphy drama called The Watchers? And it was based on a real story of a family that bought a house in the suburbs in New Jersey. And they start receiving these really weird letters that basically indicate that they're being watched. Oh. And they never caught the person writing these letters, but this couple ended up having to move out of the home.
How far is New Jersey from Colorado? How is it possible?
I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't writing their own letters.
Yeah, just for the clout.
Oh, yeah. The couple. Well, that's what the film kind of played with too.
Like, were they doing this?
Yeah, it's all orchestrated. It's a good way to get out of the house if you don't want to live there anymore, maybe.
That's a real type of stalking, a fictitious stalking disorder where you pretend to be the person being stalked, but you're stalking yourself. There was an episode of Unsolved Mysteries about it.
Wait, was it about that woman?
Yeah,
and then she eventually was found like dead and strangled with pantyhose. And they were like, and there were still people that were like, and she did that.
Yeah.
I think the way the pantyhose are tied, I'm pretty sure.
She did it herself.
Yeah. We just don't want to believe women, I guess. I feel like this is kind of weird, but I feel like people who, like me, who have like lots of tattoos and piercings and stuff, I feel like we're less likely to be like stalked and observed, because I kind of feel like sometimes the people who are stalking or observing kind of want like a blank slate type person where they can project all kinds of things on them. And so I just feel like I'm less likely to be stalked. I don't think I'm very blank slatey. So that gives me some comfort, knowing I probably won't get stalked or kidnapped.
I think you could be stalked.
Really? Don't sell yourself short.
Oh, really, guys? You mean it?
Like, I'm most likely to join a cult.
I'm most likely to start a cult.
Yes.
You be my cult?
Yeah.
Oh my God, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
So sweet.
Well, this was great. This was awesome. Until next time, signing off.